would you want?
This is April the 17th, and my name is Mario Garduel, and we are at the home of Mary Thorell, and with me is Rebecca Herb, who is a board member of the Wisconsin Regional Artists Association, and an artist herself. And we're here to learn something about the very rich history of the Wisconsin idea and the visual arts from Mary. So let me just begin by saying thank you, Mary, for being willing to talk to us. And to just start by saying, tell us a little bit about your early life. Where were you born? Where did you grow up? And how did you get interested in art?
I was born and raised in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in the 30s, in the Depression. So I was fortunate in that a lot of what was going on to save the artists, to give them an opportunity to work, was around me. All the beautiful WPA projects, and murals in every post office, sculpture. I mean, there was art down to hand silk screened drapes in the grade school auditorium. You know, all that. So there was art around, and that was because of the, I guess it was Works Project, you know, it was WPA. Give the artists something to do, keep them off the streets, you know. So that was a benefit. Up until then, I think Walter Domrosch was the first guy who did anything on the radio, who was a music professor. You'll have to look him up. And we had music appreciation, but pretty quick we had art appreciation. And as far back as I can remember, although he must have been a child, Jim Schwabach was on the scene.
Now, you were born in the 30s.
Yeah, 1930.
Right in the city of Milwaukee?
In the city of Milwaukee.
What grade school did you go to?
The first one was, I think, Seifert, and I ended up 37th Street School, and then, you know, Washington High School, pretty much, and then I came up here, studied here, and did graduate work here and at University of Illinois.
So when you were in Milwaukee, just as a child growing up, what did your dad do? What were your parents interested in?
He was a physician, and one of those immigrants that came very young, and his office was on 11th and Wells, and the museum was right there on Wisconsin Avenue, on 12th, the old building with the, you know, old style architecture, and he was on that board. And so I would spend a lot of time in that museum.
Is that the Milwaukee Public Museum?
The old building.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
And that was, man, that was excitement because that was my babysitter.
Yeah,
he'd keep me at the office for my mom, you know, and then I could go there and hang out and as long as I wanted. So you would see that mastodon at the top of the line. It was, you know.
So do you remember any paintings or any rooms or any experiences when you were a kid at the museum that just stuck with you?
Well, what early on stuck with me, I think, was the stuff you'd see at the Milwaukee Art Institute and the Layton. And early on, I think my parents were trying to keep me busy. Because people didn't have babysitters. You had to have grandma, and we didn't have a grandma there. Mm-hmm. And so I would hang out downtown in the museums and stuff, and then take classes at the Art Institute when you were a kid. Best part of that was watching old movies after.
At the museum there?
Yeah.
Huh.
It'd get us into the Art Institute auditorium. And at any rate, so that was, I remember the sculpture particularly, on various landings. I remember the paintings were very large and a lot of them very somber, what we would call now like German Romanticism. You know, they were Sturm und Drang stuff. And so that was the beginning of it. I liked to draw and I drew all the time. And when you're a little kid and you draw well, you get a lot of adulation, you know, and so you keep it up. So that was my beginning with it. And the Let's Draw started about 36 or so, did it?
It was 36.
Yeah.
So you would have been, about six?
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
6 years old.
Yeah, and look forward to that, all the kids.
Well, tell us about what a Let's Draw, being a kid in a Let's Draw classroom was like. I remember it when I was in the third grade, but I'll bet it changed a lot.
Well, I don't know, because I wouldn't have been able to measure it. It was just the idea that this was something you look forward to. It wasn't just to not have the class, because I liked my teachers. You know, the school was great. But the idea that you could just focus in on that. There's a special... Well, you know that if you've done any art. There's a kind of concentration. Mm-hmm. It's not meditation, but it's different. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what you were, as a child even, tuning into. And I relished that time.
So was it once a week?
I don't remember.
Do you remember? I think it was weekly, as I remember.
I'm sure it was at least weekly, mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't remember that specifically, but it was a big part of it, school.
And do you remember when I had Let's Draw many years later, he often would start by playing music?
Absolutely.
So can you tell us what sitting in that class was like? What happened?
Well, you were in your regular classroom at your little desk, you know, the usual thing. And we had had Walter Damrosch doing the music appreciation series. You might want to look him up. And I think Milwaukee was... I was lucky to be in a city. This was not the case, I'm sure, for kids up in little towns or in the rural area. But we got the discussion about the music and a little bit about the history. And the same kind of thing when you talked about art, you know. But mostly we were supposed to think about it. Now, we didn't write music, we didn't sit and play a piano. But so for me, the Let's Draw thing was much more significant and a part of me than the art appreciation, the music appreciation part. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, those were great things. We were lucky to have that.
So did you have crayons at your desk, pencils?
Crayons, pencils. Anything? I think that was about it. We didn't have paints. In fact, I remember... I think it must have been in junior high or high school, getting very snotty with the art teacher, because I kind of felt like all we were doing was making decorations for some dance. You know, we were doing all these, I didn't realize them as being important to me. You know, the ego was there, and I didn't want to just do stuff for to decorate some high school kids. Mm-hmm. I don't know what they were for. Mm-hmm. But it did not seem to me that it was self-expression or something. Like when if we got an assignment to do it, you'd do these dioramas and things like that. Mm-hmm. That was different.
So Mr. Schwabach's classes, had you drawing? Had you just using your imagination? Was that it?
Yeah, there would be music, there would be talk, but he was also... I think he was trying to, if I can remember this correctly, and it may be fiction by now, you know.
But nobody's here to contradict you, so it's true.
He's very kind. But I think he was trying to get us to think about motion, movement, things that we would now speak of as, or much later speak of as abstract aspects. And that's what he, you know, texture... things like that. So there was no laying any subject on you. Mm-hmm. But that's how we did it, because this was the days of the mimeograph machine and the fill in the colors, and I go crazy with all the coloring book things that are around. You know, they could just as easy teach some housewife to do art, you know, her own stuff. But okay, it's a crutch. But that was, you know, it was, and there would be the connection, I think, between movement and activity and those kind of things that were talked about as you looked at the work you were doing. It's been a part of what I've done all my life. So it was just, to me, that was part of the experience.
So did you actually finish a drawing or something in
each
class?
You had what are those, 8.5 by 11 or 12? No, they're desktop size piece of paper. And you'd, in fact, I do remember you even told to put your, I thought it was kind of dumb, put your signature, put your name on the back, you know, so you had all that space. But, so that was, it was, you know, it was a chance to just do whatever you wanted. And a lot of kids spent that time tossing stuff around the room and having conversations and so forth. So, and I was not, I'm sure I was just as social about it as, but pretty much I think we all enjoyed it. We were having a good
time. Did you have it every year then while you were in grade school?
Or I think so.
Did you?
I think so. I don't know when it petered out, when they stopped doing it.
He went till 1970.
Oh, well, see? Yeah, there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you would have had it every year while you were in school.
And before, by the time I got to the university, I did my undergraduate work in art and art history. Being the child of an immigrant, I was also taught, aside from all those problems that we talk about now, that you had to do something so you can make a living.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So aside from doing the art that I love to do, I took art history because I knew I could teach. I remember talking with Jim Waters. I was a graduate student under Oscar Hagen. I don't know if you've heard about him.
Well, let's back up.
Okay, back up.
So you're just to what brought you to the university then? So you graduated from high school. You'd had Let's Draw for all of those years. Did you know that you wanted to be an artist?
Oh, I always wanted to be, yeah. Uh-huh. But I didn't really know what that meant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just wanted to make pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was going to night school in Milwaukee and working at AC Spark Plug, building bomb sites, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that woman, you know, Rosie the Riveter, yeah, was in the entryway.
Mm-hmm.
And that picture of Uncle Sam like this, that was a poster in the room we worked in. And I learned great life lessons in that room, one of the most important was that the Army, or whatever they were, yeah, it was the Army, had guys walking around the top of the plant, the factory. Well, this was during the war.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And watching us, you know. Mm-hmm. And when they were up there, the foreman of your line would say, okay, ladies, slow down. Because they were getting paid, you know, time and materials. And I didn't know what that meant. And I learned.
that's
the way of the world, you know.
Now, were you painting during this time? I mean, did you paint on your own?
I was as far as I can remember, anytime there was a reason for a mural,
mm-hmm.
there was plenty of large rolls of newspaper. And I would be kind of because I was pretty bossy even then, I would be kind of the leader of the gang, and we'd do these murals for the school. I remember I still have some pictures, that's probably why I remember photographs of a girlfriend of mine and I standing next to we were doing the history of medicine, background of Greek buildings, ancient Greek buildings and something like that. So we did murals. That was what we did, I think, middle school, high school. I didn't take art because, as I said, I thought it was too much just decorating for a prom or something.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a waste of time. But anyway.
So did your parents encourage you to do art?
Everybody did. You know, people, when a kid is little and does stuff, those who don't do it think it's so amazing. My kids, from the time they were babies, the first thing I did with them, once they could sit up, I didn't have all these rugs here, but I remember putting down a big shower curtain and putting Molly in the middle of it with big fat pastels,
mm-hmm.
and paper all around her, sheets of paper. And so she could, she was in heaven, you know. And I just hung around to make sure she didn't eat the stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But that was her beginning art class. But people were always, there's something about, not so much now, I guess maybe because it's around and more people are involved, but people were very impressed. If you could draw, you could convey something by an image that you made. they thought that was pretty terrific. They pat your back a lot.
So did your friends draw too, or were you just sort of a standout?
I don't know. No, I had. Well, we all in school did some of that, and it. I don't remember it being. I don't know if it had to do with being a girl. No one made a big deal of it.
Mm-hmm.
You just did it.
Mm-hmm.
You could do sports stuff too. But I wasn't so much into. I did some of that, but I wasn't so much into it. But yeah, that's about.
So then you were going to night school.
Yeah,
was that kind of like vocational college now, or
well,
was
it was Milwaukee, right across the street. Oh, all those streets are gone now. Everything's changed. Right off, it was just a couple blocks from Wisconsin Avenue, and the extension. Classes were there at the time before there was a teacher's college down by the lake, but I don't know how I happened to go. I'm not quite sure on this, but all I know is it was very handy to go to night school and work at the factory in the morning all day. That was the other thing. You work from 6:30 to 3:30, so you had good hours that you could,
And then you had a couple hours off and went to school?
Yeah.
So how long did you do that for?
Until Miss Inskip, and I remember her very clearly, came along. And by then I had been doing that for about 3 years after high school. And she said, you work so many hours, so you can just... I had left home once I was 17. I left home. So just to keep yourself, food and clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, but you can do that in Madison, too.
Oh. Now, tell me about who she was.
She was a sociology teacher in the night school, and she knew what I, was interested in. I took all the psych and social history and all that stuff at night school. And then she said, why don't you just go to Madison and get a job up there?
Uh-huh.
So it takes people like that to give you a nudge,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much longer I would have done that or whether I would have soured on it altogether or what. But so I did come up here, and this was in the days when those of us in Milwaukee at the night school came up here to protest in parades of cars from Milwaukee to the university when they tried to raise the tuition to $70 a semester instead of $40. Oh, that was terrible for those of us.
Yeah,
well,
sure, of course.
A lot of money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then you came to Madison to go to the university,
yeah.
or did you just come to Madison for the wild life?
No. I came so that I could have an 8:50 class, and then after that ended, I'd go put in an hour at the primate lab or, different places,
mm-hmm.
and then I'd go to another class, and then I could go work somewhere else on stage, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So it was work, class, and it was great. I think I feel sorry for my grandkids in some ways. They had it, just had it to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when, aside from them being handed, they're nice kids. No, they had to be, of course. But between that and the machine, the boxes, I don't think they are prepared when they're done
mm-hmm.
with high school.
Mm-hmm.
They have no idea. They, like I said, I remember telling Max, my youngest grandson, I said, when I was 13, I was seduced by this Norwegian reindeer snowflake sweater. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah.
I wanted that.
Mm-hmm.
And I told my dad I wanted some money to buy that. I think it was about 14 or something. He says, you want that? Get a job.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the way mm-hmm. we learned. And mm-hmm. I said, okay, I will, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked at what was Schuster's, and then later it became Boston's store down there in Milwaukee on Wisconsin Avenue. Those were in the days when the Schuster store had, I don't know why I'm thinking of this, at Christmas time, they had penned in live reindeer.
Goodness.
In the snow, and the kids would go down there to look at them,
yeah.
to see the reindeer.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were little, we were very impressed how big they are.
Yeah,
of course.
So then you were also working when you were in Madison. You said the primate lab. Where else did you work?
Where was that?
No, where else did you work?
Oh, see.
Do you remember? Is it stores or mostly university land?
Yeah, Yost. There used to be a Yost there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Down on State Street Yost, yeah.
Yeah, the one down, that now is a mall right there, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think. You work so many. And then I would work part-time, you know, for some department or another.
Mm-hmm.
You could always find work if you wanted it. It's a little harder now, and the tuition and everything's so expensive that it's hard to pay for it, even if you knock off for 2-3 years, you know?
Mm-hmm.
God, I know my granddaughter, when she was just finishing here, she the cost in the apartment, they don't have so many of those broken down old buildings. Mm-hmm. They used to be on Johnson Street, and I could hear the animals going to slaughter at night that they drive by down on Johnson, you know, my roommate
Oscar
house.
Meyer. Oh, she's going to Oscar Mayer.
Oscar Mayer, you'd hear them bellowing and stuff.
Oh, my goodness. So that's where you lived, on Johnson Street?
Yeah, it's a nice old house. There were, and this is beside the point, but one of the coincidences that occurred about, I don't know if you know much about Greek mythology.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but my roommate, by chance, in this rooming house that we shared, the bedroom was big, was a girl named Persephone.
Mm.
How's that?
Uh-huh.
It still gives me goosebumps.
That's interesting, because your maiden name is Demeter.
That's right.
Oh, goodness.
And I was, you know, Demeter was the mother of Persephone.
Oh, gosh.
And she needed mothering. She couldn't get through a day without having some problems. She's very shy, very nice girl, but... Yeah, that was Persephone and me.
Now,
and the cows.
And the cows, goodness. So were you painting during this time? Did you have time to have a little studio in your apartment?
No,
were you
no.
taking art classes?
No, I was taking art. Mm-hmm. There used to the art department used to be at the base of, you know where the ski lift used to be?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
By the Carillon.
There's a building, kind of a wooden building up on the side there, across from... South Hall, the red building, the South, is it South Hall? And that was the art department. And, WHA was right down there, too.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Right across from us.
Yeah. Sure.
So I didn't even have to walk all the way. It's just there. But so you could get work. And I think I did, like my girls, when they were here going to school, until they went elsewhere, made a point of them understanding that working is not some burden. I have more memories of the people that I worked with. I didn't know that many of the people in the big lecture class until I was in graduate school and I worked for a professor, and you know. So it was a good experience.
So you knew even then that you wanted to major in art history. Is that right?
Well, the art history was the meal ticket,
and
the art was what I wanted to do.
Uh-huh. So talk a little bit about your art history classes and who you met and who you worked with.
I worked with, I was a TA for Oscar Hagen, who I mentioned, and he was, Oscar Hagen kind of got the art history department going here, and he was part of that exodus of German art historian scholars because of the Second World War that came over here. His daughter was famous actress Uta Hagen.
See
people. But he was a great old guy, and my job, if as well as grading papers and stuff, was to make sure nobody went into his office when he was preparing for lecture. You know, that kind of thing. So I kind of guard the door. People were walking in. Those were fun things. But at any rate, so I keep sidetracking myself. Throw me a question.
You're not sidetracking at all. So what kind of classes did you take?
Did I take?
Yeah, as an art history major.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The department was great up here. The history of Spanish art, which, you know, if you like all those wonderful. It's just, I'm not going to get into that. But I didn't take any Asian art at that time, although there was a guy who did specialize in that, who came from California. I'm trying to think of his name. His office was next to us, next to Oscar Hagen's. But at any rate, very nice guy. Oh, I picture his wife for some reason, not him. But at any rate, so he taught the Asian art, and then I got more of that later in graduate school. But so Wisconsin had a good department. We had all the European history, and then a lot of people came here in the summertime to study art history, you know, to fill in credits, and they would take the California ones would take the, and the West Coast would take the Chinese art stuff.
So did you take any studio art at the time, or it strictly history?
No, it was this, both at the same time. In fact, I even filled in, I remember this now, I'd forgotten about that. Well, I was, because I was experienced, you know, as a TA on the Hill, when one of the professors left to go back sort of suddenly to Rhode Island, I got a job, an instructorship, right on the spot to do the art appreciation thing that he was doing. And that was good for me. So, you know, you got to be there to have the opportunity. And so that was, again, another thing in my favor when I went to apply down in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
But
so then did you take, do you remember any of the professors that you took art, studio art from?
Yeah, well, Santo Singali was teaching here. And Al Sessler was a sweetheart. He taught me printmaking. And he was one of the kindest people around. And so I mostly did printmaking and not so much painting. Although I did participate. These were old Quonset hut-like buildings down there.
Mm-hmm.
And because I was short and small and easy to lift, I weighed well under 100 pounds at the time, we would try to get in on weekends to work. And my job was to be jump up on someone's shoulders to,
go through the window.
Yeah, and then let them all in, you know. And then we'd get a lot of work. They knew we were there.
Mm-hmm.
I had a part-time job cleaning the sinks in the graphics lab at that time, so I knew where things were. But cleaning the sinks was important in the lab, because when you're doing lithography and things like that, there's a lot of gunk that has to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that was another job.
Well, they must have been pleased that students wanted to be in the studio so badly that they'd break in.
I think they let them in now, I'm sure. Yeah. But at the time, I don't know.
So you got a BA?
I got a BS.
You got a BS.
Bachelor of Science in Education.
Uh-huh.
That's how they used to give it.
Uh-huh.
And when I was at Illinois, I got my, was enrolled in the home ec department.
Mm-hmm. Goodness.
Fine arts were.
So that's where, so you went to graduate school?
Yeah.
Straight from the university? Right from your BS? You went to
Illinois. Well,
Urbana?
Someone came up here I was chairman of the art gallery committee at the union, and was involved in putting out and helping put up the shows and stuff. And there was one of the judges that came, saw some of my work in the exhibit, and we got talking. He said, "Why don't you come down to Illinois?" And I said, "Sure." Got a job, And so I got a teaching assistantship down in Illinois. I don't know if it was that simple, but as I tell my kids, you get to meet people, you make opportunities. Mm-hmm. Working is not bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nowadays people, I remember I first noticed that when I was teaching some kid, things had started to change already, and kids are beginning to think like, okay, I'm here, you know. How many hours do I put in, and how much do I get? You know, that was a bit. They never got to get into what they were doing and enjoy it, you know. But that's my harangue.
Well, no, look where it led you.
Well, yeah, I had a great life. No complaints.
So then
I'd be here a little longer.
So it led you to Urbana.
Urbana, yeah.
And you were there for how long?
Probably a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then how did that next stage happen? There was a guy, I guess it was through one of my professors, who knew somebody else, you know, came, and there was an opportunity at Syracuse, and I went up there to interview, and I said, I'm leaving Wisconsin so I can walk through 18 inches of snow here, you know. I mean, Illinois spoiled me. It was that much warmer. So I talked to some other people, and sooner or later I got a, I was told about a job for the State University of New York. So I taught drawing and art and art history, painting. It was just two of us there. And the older guy that was there had been from Wisconsin, too. So all these things, you know, the linking of other people who knew somebody who was, that's the way the world goes around, I guess. You know, because you can't really fill out an application that tells all the things and where you might value a person. Whereas if you knew what kind of background they had, you know. So that's when I went to the State University of New York.
At Syracuse, did you say?
No, Syracuse was the offer.
The offer.
I didn't take that one. I went down, I got offered the other job at, well, it was Endicott, New York. And like you'd say, what's that? And I didn't know either. It was like maybe 40 to 60 miles away from Cornell. Right in the center of the state, you know. And so I had a lot of, I'd go judge stuff at Cornell, you know what I mean? It was sort of nice. I wasn't down in the city, which I didn't think I wanted. It was great. You were close enough, you could go down, you could see all. It amazed me the first time I went to the Museum of Modern Art, and that had happened before I was teaching in New York State. A bunch of us here got in a car and decided we're going to go to New York. You know, that goes, and we did it. We got there. How many people we met in the lobby of the Museum of Modern Art who were from Wisconsin? You know, it's just like small world. Good grief! Yeah. So,
so how long were you teaching there
at New York?
Yeah.
Let me think. Jim Watrous, whenever he started the murals, at, in this Commerce Building. I was here, I would come here to work for him in the summer, and he said, why don't you just, you know, we'll get you I had a General Motors grant, God knows, you know, some of, what professors have to find money for their students from wherever, and he and I mean, who was the other guy, he became later the head of the department at Texas or someplace, but he and I can't think of his name just now. We were, there was a lab, an art history lab, at the top of Bascom Hill Hall, and it was kind of, you went up through, nobody knew about it, but Jim Watrous had, it was a big space, easily this, the size of my house, and it, we worked on his murals and stuff up there, and he was doing mosaics. He had come back from Italy with a grant, and he taught me how to cut those little mosaic glasses with a, now why I remember that, the Martellina, which was kind of a sharpened little axe that you would chip those things, so you had to cut them a certain way so they fit in. And if you ever have some time, go over and look at them. They're in the Commerce Building.
In the Commerce Building. So you worked on those.
Yeah, yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah. And
and that was your summers.
Yeah. I come, and then finally, this is the perhaps most romantic part of the story, but not necessarily appropriate to your discussion, but one night at the 602 Club, I ran into a kid I knew in high school.
Oh.
And in fact, as he used to say, yes, she used to boss me around then, because he was my sports editor, and I was the editor-in-chief of the Washington High School newspaper. And we kind of liked each other. We hadn't gotten dated or anything in high school. And we ended up getting married, and things changed. You know, you start having kids. And not, I don't, I'm not sorry for that, but I know it takes so much more energy than people ever can explain. Or, you know, I don't know how these young women have babies and keep working and blah, 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 you know. But anyway, I'm so old now, just the thought of it makes me tired.
So then that was what got you back to Wisconsin for keeps,
yeah,
being married,
yeah,
and
yeah.
So did you ever go back to school? Did you teach? Did you set up a studio?
Yeah, I taught for the extension here, night school. And there were some winter nights when I'd be waiting for my class members who were mature and elderly women driving up from Janesville or someplace. And I'd be saying, don't come, stay home, it's snow, there's too much snow. You know, they'd come. These good old gals, they got themselves up here. So I taught those kind of classes, and they were generally kind of art history.
So was that Schwabach you were teaching for? Curry was gone by this time, wasn't he?
I never had met Curry. Mm-hmm. I knew of Curry because of the mural, the things that were around. Mm-hmm. And Watrous talked about him. It was in the context not so much of a... Well, it was just generally, I think, about the Wisconsin, the art in Wisconsin, you know, because he was such a big part of that. But I learned more about him, strangely enough, when I was teaching an art appreciation section down at Illinois, and I had to teach myself a little bit about the Midwest artists of that era. Mm-hmm. And, I'm trying to think of their names. There were a lot of artists who became quite well known at about the same time. And come back here now.
I mean, are we talking people like Thomas Hart Benton?
That's it. There you go. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. She knows more about them.
No, I was just thinking.
But that was that whole school. There were a whole bunch of them at that generation who were. Otherwise, as a kid, because of that WPA, and there's, I probably saw the work of a lot of these people in the schools, and post offices were big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The post office was the best place to be. Now you go in there, they're just nothing.
Well, there's still some of the old post offices that still
they
have
still
the
have
murals.
Yes, I know them. Right. But now they don't plan on that at all.
So you were. So who did you when you were teaching nights at for extension? Were you teaching with Watrous? Was he also teaching?
No,
or who else?
No.
Who do you remember?
Who was in charge of that program?
Was it Schwabach?
No, Schwabach. Somehow I hooked up with him again, and we'd do these road trips around the state of Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And, he was in and around. I knew of him because of as a kid.
Yeah.
He used to live right down the street here. And somehow we got hooked up again, a couple of us students, and we'd drive around the state and go and do these, people would bring in their work, and we'd have these kind of discussions of things, and people liked the idea of. By this time, I knew all about 4-H, and I was very involved in that as a parent. Mm-hmm. But the thing about that, which is perhaps a departure, but not really. Jim Schwabach had a lot of great ideas, and and a rather unassuming kind of person. He knew what he was about. He knew what he was doing, and. We'd go to these towns, and some of the most moving experiences in my life were just critiquing and talking with mostly women would come in.
Tell us what one of these was like. You would...
Oh, I tell you. They'd come in, they'd bring their stuff, and they'd set it around. We'd have a kind of a jury discussion, with them. There wasn't any... You'd acknowledgement. There wasn't so much. There were no ribbons and awards, okay, but you talked and you shared the discussion with the whole group. So they had to take they had chutzpah, as we say in a city, that if they were shy about their work, they were they had to learn how to put up with that kind of.
So how did they publicize that these events were going to happen?
I think that was through the extension. The word got out. And they would be in different towns or villages around the state. Jim would drive, and there'd be one or two of us grad students or, you know, whatever, in the car with him, and we'd go. And to me, the most important thing about that was, one, I had not realized, or how can I say it? Girls going to college in my era thought they were pretty privileged. You know, it was not that usual, in a way. On the other hand, these women saw nothing but the rear end of a mule, you know. They were farm women, and yet they decided they wanted to make pictures.
Yeah.
Somewhere along the line, they did it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting very goosebumpy thinking about this now. And we'd talk about what they were trying to do and what, how, you know, maybe corrections or whatever. But they were so earnest and so genuine. It was different than my participation in the judging of stuff at the union, where the kids were all art students, kids, graduate students, whatever. These were people. I remember one woman, she brought her stuff up to me, and we talked about it for a while, and she was very moved, and she said, you know, no one's ever told me that I was doing something special the way you have. I mean, I can hardly tell you that now. And it was just, at any rate, when you run into something like that, you realize how important those, what, you know, you teach for the extension of 1,000 years or whatever. Nobody ever thinks about it that way, how personal it was, how important it was. She felt like she counted for something in this life.
Yeah. So was this in the 1950s or 60s? When was this, about when was this going on?
Yeah, I was teaching overlapping the 50s. I don't know. It's all a big jumble because there was so much of it. It was over a long period of time.
Now, did you start doing this when you were a graduate student?
Yeah.
Or was this after you'd had
your
babies?
It was a graduate student thing. We'd go around the state and we'd stay overnight at some little town. And they'd bring their stuff to a school or wherever we were the next day, or if it was within one day. And the discussion part was so important.
Yeah.
And they were so proud of what they did. And there was a lot of talent.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of, quite a few of them. This was interesting with another person that came in with these really slick, well-done paintings. You know, like they'd, I don't know what, how you say it, the kind of things you used to see in the art magazines, the courses people would take. And they were well done. And you know, and you deal with it appropriately, I hope. But somehow, the ones that caught your eye are the ones that were the more primitive, perhaps, or unassuming. You know, weren't so slick.
That had the passion.
That's right. And that was it. That's what got you.
And also things from their own lives, probably.
Yeah. And I remember one lady talking with her, and she said, you know, people... I never felt like I counted for something special. I mean, those kind of things, you know, I'd go there today and spend time with folks like that because they had the right spirit and they did it. And I remember this one lady, she says, you know, this is the first time I ever got a first place in anything. And I said, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. And she said, yeah, she says, nobody ever told me that what I was doing was that outstanding. Those weren't the words. But she was so thrilled, and as many of them were, you'd run into, and you weren't trying to play up to them or anything. There was no point in it. There was no reason. It was just they did a good job, and they put their heart and soul. And that was the thing that caught me. I didn't care what the subject was. I really didn't care. I really wanted to see what I saw of them in it. And that really counted to me. And they also, they had the feeling, that's, oh, wow, somebody understands. Somebody digs me, you know, to put an old expression. Yeah, this is nice. I mean, my earliest art experiences, if you want to call them that, by the time I was, you know, these little chairs, little wooden chairs your kids used to sit on, by the time I was able to sit there and hold a needle and a thread, I was taught to embroider, you know. Doing things with your hands, it was always like, we've got them. They work. They do things. You know, what is this? It isn't only for playing the piano, although, yeah. You know, I played the violin because that was, my sister played the piano. You know, it was that kind of thing in a middle-class family. But to make things, when men would make carvings and these things, turn trees into whatever, that was kind of, yeah, that's what you do. Mm-hmm. Well, women got to stitch these mm-hmm. Norwegian towels, you know, yeah. My mother mm-hmm. did those too, that stitch. I had to learn it. Mm-hmm. And that was nice, but it was the idea that a person had something they did with their hands that they could say, I did this. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's so important, and people just mm-hmm. don't, I hope they're still getting it yeah. with all the TV time spent, yeah. you know. Thank you. Yeah. Well, thank you for being here.
Well, in fact, Becky, who is having to leave now, is, I think I told you, she's on the board of the Artists Association, and she took me out to Richland Center a couple of weeks ago to see
what they're doing.
One of these, because Becky had some paintings in the show, mm-hmm. and they still did, the judge,
yeah.
who was a guest, came in and did a lecture in the morning.
Bye-bye, thank you for coming.
Bye, Becky. Kind of a workshop.
Yes, yeah.
And then he had judged the pieces a couple of weeks before, oh, so he already knew which ones he liked. And my understanding is that the way the Artists Association works it now is that he'll select about a third of the shows that will go, the pieces that'll go to the state show.
Yeah.
A third will get honorary mention, and then he would do a public critique of all of those, and then anybody else who wanted to stay for as long as they wanted, and talk about their own pieces. Was that the way they did them at that time? Do you remember?
I can't remember that there was that much that kind of formality, and the groups were small, you know, maybe a couple dozen people, on average. You know, they weren't real big, but it's that same kind of idea that mm-hmm. you had the freedom and the time to spend, and people want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. You know. Now, most of these people, the women that you're talking about, and some men probably, didn't have teachers, did they? Were they just painting for themselves? Did many of them have teachers or groups that they were part of?
I don't know that they had classes as such, or, you know, like if you lived in a big city, you could
mm-hmm.
go to.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know, or if there was an extension class out there sometime. There was an awful lot in most communities even then that were what we used to call like hobby things, you know, like mm-hmm. knitting and carving. A lot of chip carving people used to do. Mm-hmm. And so there were things you could have an outlet for, you know. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you would sit there and start from scratch from a white piece of paper or canvas, and they had to discover how to use those paints and stuff. They didn't get much exposure to that.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of it was just like all of us do. You kind of research it as you uh-huh. go along.
Now, did Schwabach teach any classes out in these small towns?
He may have. I was so caught up in what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure he was doing something. There was plenty of groups. And he may have even been in another town for part of the day. You know, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
So how long did you do that for? A couple of years? Was during the whole time that you were a graduate student?
Well, on and off. I don't really know. Once I got married and had little kids, I couldn't do it that
much. Certainly, yeah.
But there were... And then these segments of time, I think my time at Illinois, my time, it was, couple of years, I'd say between 2 and 4 years segments,
mm-hmm.
if you count the time at the university, you know, and there were overlaps.
Did you stay in touch with Schwabach after you graduated?
Yeah, he lived right near here, so we'd see each other.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I remember his wife. He had a son that was always getting into trouble, as I remember.
So did you keep talking about art then?
I think our, as time went on, and I wasn't involved in that program, it was more just, you know, hi, how are you? What mm-hmm. you doing? How's mm-hmm. your health?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that becomes more important as time
I remember on. There in 1948, Barton and the College of Agriculture brought out a book called Rural Artists of Wisconsin.
That's right.
That was a lot of the painters that had worked with Schwabach and had worked with Curry. Do you remember that book at all?
No, I don't. That doesn't mean anything.
Uh-huh.
But I'd like to look at it sometime. But at any rate, there was a lot of people were very open to that kind of thing. I don't remember that the University of Illinois had such a, they may have had a similar program, but they didn't have a Schwabach.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Do you remember what he was like? Tell us about Schwabach,
nice.
Because we don't have a tape of him.
No. Oh, you don't?
No.
Can't you hear any of the wife's name?
Matilda.
Matilda, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. She's a very nice lady, too. Yeah, they were just really... there's some people, and I think maybe it was because we had the art thing as our connector. You don't have to learn much about him. It's just suddenly you know him and that's it.
Mm-hmm. You know. So he was a comfortable person to be around?
Oh, yeah, very. If he wasn't, he'd fool me. I mean, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what his private life was.
Uh-huh.
And did he have just the one son or did he have another one?
I don't know of any
others,
but...
Yeah, yeah. But they were very nice people. Very easy. You could chat with it about anything, but it was never... You know, those were long car rides. What the heck did we talk about? It'll all come back to me about 3 in the
probably
morning.
Don't call me at 3
no,
in the morning.
No, I won't. I always tell it. I'll remember at 3 in the morning, but I'm not going to call you.
So I'm just, to kind of wind up, to go back to the sessions that you did with him in these small towns.
Yeah.
So was there a formal meeting? Was there any presentation like they're doing now? Or did it just start out with people bringing in their paintings and setting them up?
He might have started some of them in a school or in a church or wherever we were mm-hmm. that was new to this to the program. But I think they all knew what was going on. And he'd have a section. There might be two of us graduate students. And the other one might have another, you know, simultaneously.
Mm.
So there was, it's not as though we were in the same room together even for most of any of it.
So were you doing some of the critiques too?
Yeah,
or were you
yeah.
all just assisting him?
No, we were doing we were given our, head and we just went for it.
Uh-huh.
I think, having been around at a lot of judgings and art kind of things like that, you learned what the judges would be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was no script. We just knew what we... Well, you picked it up from the person you're talking to.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it wasn't a core... We weren't really prepared for it.
Uh-huh. So it sounds like each critique was very personal?
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was... And that, I think that's why it went further than just being, oh, yeah, I like that red. Why'd you put this purple here? And blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. It was very personal. And I think these folks grabbed onto that because they were doing something very personal. They couldn't always explain it or know even why they mm-hmm. did it the way they did, which is no different than it is for any of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you've been doing it for 50 years or 5 years or 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good thing, and I think anybody who's doing it now deserves credit because
mm-hmm.
it's tough, I think. The first time you jump into a situation like that where there are half a dozen or a dozen people sitting around, and you have to discuss things with them, and there are certain, you have to be sensitive to certain cues. You don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, you know, and people will take things in a different way, yeah, blah, blah, blah. So you learn a lot, especially when you're a smart aleck grad student, you know, think you know it all.
Well, it sounds like he kind of had the sort of personality to figure out the kind of person he was
that
talking
he wanted.
To
and
to be able to draw them out,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that right?
I think so. He was a guy with a... But he had worked with ordinary people for so many years before I met him, you know, and that let's draw thing mm-hmm. made him, I think, organize the skills he needed. I mean, let's think about it. If you go look up there are probably tapes of those old shows, at least the radio shows, mm-hmm. And listen to, I'd like to listen to what he was asking and saying. But that gave him the kind of, because he was not looking for technique per se. Okay, it was more on the level of feeling and abstract mm-hmm. elements like movement and rhythm and texture, and, you know. So, and that was easier to talk about mm-hmm. because, in a way, mm-hmm. it was very important to talk about, very fundamental to what was going on. But was also, I think, something that people could talk about because they weren't worrying about whether this toenail was here or there, mm-hmm. you know?
So they weren't worrying about whether there was a right way to do it.
Right, he just sort wrong, of... Yeah. Uh-huh. That, boy, that's the hardest thing to get over. And I think with adult students, at least, it used to be even tougher because, what do you mean, right and wrong? It had to look like something.
Mm-hmm.
If it didn't... You know, and I remember saying such cliche things like, you know, if I wanted a photograph of this, I'd take a photograph. Now they have it on their phones. They can all just click a picture.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But,
Well, that's wonderful. So you did that, and then you got married, but you obviously, I mean, people who are listening to this can't see it, but we're in Mary's home surrounded by big, magnificent, sometimes abstract, very colorful works. So you've obviously been painting all your life.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what you did after school when you had the babies.
I did participate in some... I have a studio back there. I did participate in some art exhibits in town, the Madison Art Association, and, you know, things like that. But it got to be very hard to do that and have something ready at the right time. And so that all slowed down considerably. And then I got more involved in getting my kids to do things, or giving them the opportunity, helping them with the opportunity. I think that then, through the extension again, why did I get called upon? You know, so, you don't know how some of these things start.
Mm-hmm.
But I did... Strange enough, because I had worked for the extension, I got a call from somebody who was in charge of the department at the time. There was a woman on campus who taught Chinese. She was a Chinese American, and they wanted to do an outreach class, and they asked if, because I had kids of the right age, and I said, sure, I'll come down, I'll bring my daughter. And we even had one little black kid in that class. At that time, this was pretty far off.
Mm-hmm.
And in we met in the Congregational Church near campus, at any rate, and then another couple other churches, they'd let us take their space. And we'd meet on Sundays, and I remember getting a chuckle out of the fact that I used to complain because I had to go take Greek lessons when I was a kid and waste my Sundays. And these kids were learning Chinese, you know, and their parents were Chinese or Chinese American. And they wanted the kids to maintain that. And that's the language.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the things that come along with the language. We built the dragons. We had the big New Year's celebrations and the food and all that. So But it was that kind of crazy stuff that Extension gets involved in. And I do remember those kids saying, why am I learning Chinese on Sunday afternoons? You know, they're American kids, just like I was American. And why am I learning Greek? What, you know, what is that? My parents felt I wouldn't regret it. I don't. At the time, I thought, well. So because of the Extension and my connection with that, I ended up starting the first Chinese school in Madison.
Goodness, really?
And dragged more kids into this.
So, but you did art, and it sounded language, a whole cultural.
And I thought my kids should learn stuff like that, too. And, you know, you get a few other parents, and before you know it, you got a class. And but it was all through the Extension. So I have to say how fortunate I was that in this state, that not only did we have Let's Draw and so forth as kids in Milwaukee, but we had the Extension, who I think of as one of the swellest things on campus. And the idea that through the Extension, which at that time was in the Ag School, my kids got involved in 4-H. I mean, these were not country kids, you know, and I went around teaching, setting up art exhibits and stuff with the 4-H kids, judging shows and stuff, and the county fairs.
Now, didn't Schwabach have anything to do with those shows, or was
No, that was the Extension. Uh-huh. We really got through that. No, he was not much into 4-H. He may have been. There wasn't anything. But that was because my kids, you know, I felt a connection that way.
Sure. So you kind of did 4-H art.
On my own, yeah. That was, but, you know, he was still busy doing his thing. And I'm sorry. When I last had their tube rugs washed, they did not put the pads down.
So they're slipping.
So it's like this. And I keep saying I'm going to do, but I usually don't sit in here because I'm sort of allergic to goat hair.
Oh, goodness.
No, I'm okay. I'm just rubbing my eyes.
Well, I think we're about to wind up, but I'd just love to know, you worked through Extension doing art with your kids and the 4-H project. It sounds like you kept a connection with the Chinese school, which was 4-H as well. I mean,
well,
with Extension.
Extension, yeah. Extension. That started it. Mm-hmm. And then pretty soon we were on our own.
But then you've kept painting, obviously.
Yeah, not as much, of course, but I have things in progress. Let's say we've got quite a few.
Well, let's just end by saying, how would you describe your art?
You know, and I used to teach about stuff like this.
Right. If Schwabach were talking to you now and saying, Mary, what kind of painting do you do? What would you tell him?
Big.
Big.
I would do bigger if I had the space. I like to feel, I know it sounds weird, but I feel like I'm inside this thing when I'm working on it. I don't know if that makes any sense.
It does.
So the sense of being surrounded by it, these are not as big as I'd like to do. maybe that was a carryover from the murals in grade school and middle school. But the idea that you're in the picture, and the only thing I can say as far as the connection to some of the shapes and things that go on in these pictures, movement is a big part of it. I think you can see that. And I have two daughters that are professional dancers. I can't dance. I'm a slug. My mother danced, and my father danced. One did the mountain dances of Greece, and the other one did the more Turkish kind of stuff. She came from Samos, just off Turkey. So the dancing didn't die out with me. my girls did it.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
So, yeah. So movement and the sense of sound, you know, and color are perhaps far removed in a way from Let's Draw. But it gave me a chance as a kid to find that I could do this and people liked it. I remember asking one of my girls when they were doing, we had this Chinese professor and some parents and myself, taught the girls how to do the Chinese ribbon dance. I don't know if you know. Mm-hmm. And they put on a show at the Congregational Church down there near Breeze Terrace. And Lisa, I think, was maybe 5 at the time. And I remember saying to her, I could not have gone up on a stage and done that. Could never have done it. I said, how do you feel? Why do you why do you like this? Kid looked at me, drew herself up and said, because they love me. Can you believe that?
Good for her.
She got the nail on the head, the head on, whatever.
Well, I think you're talking about music and color and things. I remember in the third grade at Edgewood School, we had Let's Draw. And even then, I think Mr. Schwabach was on the radio till close to 1970.
Oh, I believe it.
And he would start out by saying, by putting some music on.
Yes, that was the music.
And then he'd say, now you've got some crayons in front of you. I want you to draw what this music makes you feel.
Yes.
So we weren't supposed to draw a picture of something. We were supposed to capture our feelings.
The feeling.
And it was movement and color, just like you said.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And that was in those, we got that in Let's Draw. And when I think of even getting back to the original idea here, John Stuart Curry, that style of painting, though it was representational, sort of, it was full of movement. And it was full of, I don't know if he played music in his studio. Mm-hmm. Aaron Borod, I used to go with, that was another thing I didn't mention. I used to go on those same kind of trips with Aaron.
Did you really?
Yeah.
So what was, did he do it the same way that Schwabach did?
I guess so. It's hard for me to remember. All I know is he lived there my husband and I lived on Monona Drive, and he lived down near the water, he and his wife. And we'd jump in the car, and we'd go to I didn't do it for as much time as my connection with Jim, but Borod, very sweet man. Again, just a honey, God.
I think that seems to be one of the hallmark of all the arts extension people we've talked to, is people...
generous kind.
Generous, good human beings.
Yeah.
Who just saw the good in everybody and the creativity
and
in everybody.
And wanted to share it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't this, Herr Dr. Professor, I'm telling you this, blah, 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 which was... the kind of Milwaukee German educational system could have been had it not been for Let's Draw and Walter Damrosch and things like that.
Oh, well, this is wonderful. Well, Mary, I'd like to take a picture of you, if I may, with one of your paintings.
Okay.
But mostly, thank you so very much for talking to us, and I hope that lots and lots and lots of people listen to this recording and... just know what the great history of extension and the arts and people like yourself in it was all about.
It's the idea, the whole extension program, to be a cliche, the Wisconsin idea. Mm-hmm. That's very important.
It's very important. It means a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome.